In the year 1991, U.S. Flight 1313 soared unknowing unto its death. As the vessel sank into the ocean's depths, three boys washed ashore on Skull Face Island. Near death, pursued by vicious creatures, the boys stumbled upon shelter. Who built it and for what purpose, none could say. But, to their shock and amazement, a 55-inch TV glowed within, streaming every movie ever made.
I'd stick my neck out for nobody.
What the hell is this?
You're an inhuman monster!
I said good day!
After 20 years struggling for survival, they managed to repair the shelter's communication device. Perhaps someday, they'll be rescued. But until then, they'll watch and discuss movies, hoping, praying you're listening.
Hello and welcome. This is Adam Fraser, aka Famous Monster, and you are listening to Skull Face Island, the official movie podcast of geeksofdoom.com. As always, I'm joined by the last Starfighter champion, David Allen.
Hello.
And a man of many talents, not least of which is knitting, producer Tim Grant.
Hello.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Tim. Hello.
Today on the show, we're going to talk about A Shark Named Bruce, the upcoming film Premium Rush by director David Koepp, and everyone's favorite robotic butler, Martin. But first, Tim, flip the switch on the Geek-O-Matic news machine.
Here she comes.
All right. Got it.
Yes.
Got it.
All right.
Cool. Well, let's see here. The first bit of news we have is Media Rights Capital close to distributing Ron Howard's ambitious adaptation of Stephen King's The Dark Tower.
Yep. Previously, it was reported that Warner Brothers had passed on Ron Howard's adaptation of King's seven-book series. And before that, I believe it was passed up by Universal. So
yeah, it's been just about everybody's had a look at this thing.
I love The Dark Tower. It's my favorite series of books.
Really?
Hands down.
Is it really?
Yeah, I love it.
Of all time.
Of all time. And I mean, I would love to see it brought to life, but I just don't think it's feasible.
Yeah.
You got seven books that are the size and scope of Lord of the Rings, each book.
Yeah.
And they've been trying to figure out how to make it. They're talking about doing three movies and three television seasons. And it's just, it sounds like it's unadaptable.
You know, okay, but that's the exact same thing they said about Martin's Song of Fire and Ice, which is now Game of Thrones on HBO. And it's been really successful.
Yeah.
And not only successful, but like it's getting better. This second season was...
Yeah.
Even better than this than the first season.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's if for people who have read the books too, they have made changes, like little choices here and there, but it's been really, really good.
And I would agree. Like I think Dark Tower could definitely work as just a television series,
just a straight series.
Yeah, AMC or HBO or something like that. I don't think it's ready for a movie adaptation, just because the risk you run with a movie adaptation, like we've seen this with the Narnia movies or, Lord forbid, the Golden Compass movies, where you make one book or you maybe even make two or three books into a movie, and then the interest isn't there, the money isn't there, and then it just kills it.
It drops, yeah.
And if the interest isn't there for a movie, then they're not going to greenlight a television series.
It's I think another good example is not in the same as far as like adaptations, but that sort of like, you know, multimedia approach is X-Files.
Yeah.
X-Files, the original idea was to, you know, have a couple seasons of a TV show and then do like two or three movies to round out the mythology and really finish off the arc. Clearly didn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, the first movie was successful. It was okay.
Yeah,
like, it paid its dues, but it wasn't a huge hit, and it really didn't bring back interest in everything after that film. it just dropped.
Yeah, it started going down.
People, you know, the cast started leaving and writers, you know, weren't consistent. And
yep.
So it's a risk, but...
Yeah. So the news here is that Media Rights Capital, I guess the owner of MRC, mm-hmm. Modi Wiznik?
Wizard? Wichik?
Yeah.
That's like a... He has like a Czechoslovakian name. I can't pronounce that.
Yeah.
Modi W.
We're going to have to get better at pronouncing these names here.
Well, I mean, what do you expect me to do without a...
I don't think Modi's listening to this.
Yeah. Well, could be.
It could be.
Unless he is, at which point I apologize.
And then we're going to hear from his lawyer.
Oh.
Yeah. Good luck finding us, Modi's lawyer.
But if he does, I'm going to have to deal with this shit.
If you do, bring enchiladas.
Okay, continue.
All right.
He's apparently...
Yeah, the owner of MRC is a huge Stephen King fan, and he loves the Dark Tower books, and so he's eager to capitalize on the positive momentum that his company has got from financing movies like Seth MacFarlane's Ted, and I think their next film coming up is Neil Blomkamp's Elysium Matt Damon.
Yeah, which looks really good. Yeah. I have a feeling it's going to be another big hit.
So it sounds like these guys are picking up steam to the point where they might be able to somehow find a way of adapting this. But the key is really to put contracts in place to get all these people secured for the entire arc of this thing.
Yeah.
Because you change one thing and it's going to fall apart.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think that we do have a precedent for that right now, though, with the whole Marvel approach.
Yeah.
You know, I think it does make sense to a degree. So they're saying they want to make a movie, three seasons, and then like a movie or two, something like that.
Yeah.
Gunslinger, which is the only book of the series that I've read.
Okay.
Is very much a standalone.
Yeah, very much.
It could be sold. I could totally envision them making a film out of Gunslinger and then saying, if you're still interested in this character, if you still want to, you know, see what Roland's up to, follow us into this television show. And so I think in that sense, I think that it's not a terrible approach.
Yeah.
But they've really got to nail that first movie. And then if they haven't signed everybody at that point, then that's where they got to catch them. They got to get everybody locked in from then on.
And the main character, Roland, the gunslinger, mm-hmm. Previously we were talking about Javier Bardem playing the part, but now it sounds like Russell Crowe is attached. And nothing against Russell Crowe. Obviously, he's a great actor. But I feel like he's just not right for this. It's kind of it's obvious in a way that he would be the 3:10 to Yuma style Western kind of character to portray the gunslinger, but the gunslinger has a lot more depth than that. So that's why I was excited for Javier Bardem, or I think even someone like a Guy Pearce would be great for that part.
Oh, but, man. Yeah. No, that's great. And he's already shown us that he can play the Western in the film The Proposition.
Exactly.
So
we'll see. It's been in production hell for a while, and it'll probably stay there for another year or two at least. So
yeah.
All right, what's the next news topic?
Next bit of news we have is Anna Kendrick, Imogen Poots, and Felicity Jones on shortlist for mysterious role in Captain America, The Winter Soldier, a.k.a. Captain America 2. This is, I don't know, what do you think? What do we think this is about?
Well, the word on the street is apparently that Anthony and Joe Russo, the directors, they are hoping to spark a new romance with Captain America. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like they're going to be introducing the character of Sharon Carter, who is the niece of Peggy Carter.
That's what I figured they were going to do. Yeah. Is that official? Have they said that that's who it is?
No, there hasn't been any confirmation on that.
Okay.
It's just a rumor at this point. But I would imagine Sharon Carter will show up, and she'll probably be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that plays some sort of vital role in the Winter Soldier storyline.
Mm-hmm. My personal choice would probably be Felicity Jones. I don't know if you're familiar with her work at all. She's really, really good.
What's she in?
She was just in that movie with Anton Yelchin, the Crazy in Love. It's like this really...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love her.
And then she was great. In Ricky Gervais's Cemetery Junction. She hasn't had a whole lot of huge roles recently. She was in an indie British film called Albatross recently. She's really good in. She's just this brilliant I mean, she just has that sort of classic, you know, British actress skill that seems to come naturally to them. But I think it would make sense. It would be, I know that they're playing Americans, but it would fall in line with the continuity of like having another British actress play the original character with Hayley Atwell in the first film. And then having her play this. I don't know. Yeah. She's really good. I think she would be really great for it. So.
Cool. And obviously Chris Evans will be returning as Captain America. Mm-hmm. And Anthony Mackie is joining the cast as the Falcon.
Yeah, which is great. I'm a huge Anthony Mackie fan.
Yeah, he's
great. I think this guy is fantastic. He has not gotten the roles that I think he deserves. He was really good in The Hurt Locker.
Yep.
He had a supporting role in there. Just a really brilliant up-and-coming actor. And so I think he's a really great choice.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Cool. Well, we've got one more headline here on the Geekomatic news machine, and boy, I gotta tell you, I don't think Tim is gonna be too pleased.
No, I don't think so either. If you listened to us last week, we talked a little bit about remakes, and Tim was pretty upset about the recently announced Videodrome news.
As we all were.
Nanodrome.
Nanodrome. Well, this one has been in the works for a little while. Spike Lee's Old Boy adds Samuel L. Jackson. Old Boy being a sort of modern foreign classic at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
By director Chan-wook Park. It was one in his trilogy of Vengeance, he called it.
Yeah.
None of the films really connected. It's just about people getting back at other people.
Yep.
Hyper-violent, aesthetically, just visually striking, a really phenomenal film, really, really hard to watch at points, the story-wise and just the overall, visuals. But,
Eating a raw octopus and beating people to death with the claw side of a hammer.
Oh, but man, the hammer scene, it's so genius.
Well, yeah, and while we're talking about that, the hammer scene is not going to be in this movie.
I know. No, I think that's good, though. I mean, I think Spike Lee's really smart. I'm a big Spike Lee fan, and that one bit of information, he's not going to include that hallway scene, is, I think, a really intelligent move, because it's him saying, like, clearly we're remaking this film in an American, as an American version.
Yeah.
But we're not going to try and make the same film as the original. We're not going to try and repeat, these wonderful scenes.
Right.
Because they already did it. There's no point to trying to do it in an American way.
And
but tell us about who Samuel Jackson's going to be playing.
Yeah, Sam Jackson has been confirmed for a small role. Apparently he's going to play one of the guys that Josh Brolin, who's the main character, who's been kidnapped, held captive for like 15 years and framed for the murder of his wife. When he breaks out and he goes on this quest for vengeance and getting answers, Sam Jackson is going to be one of the guys that he essentially tortures to try to get that information.
Okay. Okay.
So, I mean, that could be cool, I guess.
I don't know. I'm hesitant, but I really do have faith in Spike Lee as a filmmaker to, I think, give this a good treatment. But...
And Sharlto Copley from District 9...
Oh, cool.
He got cast as, I guess, the film's main villain, Adrian Price.
Oh, right on. That'll be good.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
This is...
But Tim, I think, has some things to say.
I'm just so curious, because here's why I think this is being remade.
Okay.
People don't like to read subtitles.
You are correct.
This film is one of the greatest films in the last several decades, I think. So people don't want to read subtitles, so we're going to remake it for them so they don't have to read. But the content in this film is so, so dark.
Yeah, I'm curious about how they're going to handle that.
If you want to remake a movie, a romantic comedy, then go for it. Yeah, maybe the people that go see romantic comedies every weekend don't want to read subtitles. I get it. But the people that... the people that are going to go to this that don't want to read subtitles yet are seeing this dark... I just don't understand why we have to remake this. You know what I mean? It's like people are lazy enough not to want to read subtitles, but they're fucked up enough to want to go see a movie with this kind of content in it?
Do you think that that's the case? Because I've thought about this a lot, and I agree. And I mean, some of my favorite films are the originals of things that were eventually remade. And there have been some, you know, fairly successful ones, like Magnificent Seven being a really great remake of Seven Samurai.
Sure.
To continue the Western theme, like Fistful of Dollars being a really great remake of Yojimbo.
Yep.
I think part of it is just simply kind of Americanizing or Westernizing it, if you will, if it happens to be, you know, an Eastern film. But I think the other part of it, too, is that this gives this story a chance to be seen by a much wider audience than it was going to be seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Old Boy is, it was a huge hit in Korea. It's a South Korean film. Massive hit over there. And very slowly, it kind of made its way over here.
Sure.
And finally got picked up, I think, by like Tartan Video and was released on DVD. And that's really when people started seeing it.
Yeah.
But it's still, I don't think, has been seen like by a really large audience.
Well, that's always the argument for remaking things, is that it takes that original and brings it to a bigger, newer audience.
I mean,
but that's not the reason that it's being done. It's being done to make money.
Oh, yeah.
And and then it's also being done because we don't like to read subtitles. I'm just going to keep going back to this.
I think that that's partially true, but then there's a bunch of examples of films that are foreign that were really big hits. Like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was a massive film.
The Passion of the Christ, can I say that?
Passion of the Christ was a really big movie. Whatever you think of it, regardless, but that movie is in Aramaic. I don't speak Aramaic. I had to read the words.
But I mean, you had two directors that are known by an American audience. So that's one element to it. Why don't we just re-release great films like
Actually,
this?
I would like to disagree with you there. Ang Lee was not known at that point.
Oh, he
that's
was.
Where Ang Lee got known.
No, Sense and Sensibility he had made, and it was a.
But that was Emma Watson's movie more than anything. As far as public perception, it's neither here nor there. So, because she wrote it, she wrote the movie.
Oh.
She won an Oscar for that screenplay.
I wasn't around for that.
Oh, that's a really good movie.
I was watching Gremlins 2, the new batch, probably. So
again.
My point is that he was connected with a studio in the States.
Right. And I do agree with you. It is bothersome, but I don't know. I think that it's. But one of the things we're starting to see, though, happen now, this is what's interesting to me, is we're starting to see a lot of movies be remade in Bollywood. Like, a lot of American films are being remade over there.
Sure.
And then they just announced recently that Warner Japan is going to remake Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood Western classic, as a samurai film.
Yeah.
So it's starting to switch, and I think that's going to be really, I think, interesting to see how that affects just sort of perceptions of movies, because it's no longer about the big westernization of the movie.
Right.
Now it's just people saying, well, we're going to tell the story in a way that's relatable to our culture.
Well, I don't really know much else about this movie other than what we've talked about right now,
right,
as far as the remake goes.
Right.
I had hopes when I heard that Spike Lee was doing it, because there for a while it was going to be Spielberg doing it with Will Smith. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh.
Then that fell apart.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. I do feel like I briefly remember that.
But my hope with Spike Lee taking it over is that it was going to be turned into this kind of, not necessarily a blaxploitation movie, but really giving it a twist as far as the setting, the location, the characters. You know, what if someone like Quentin Tarantino took this Old Boy remake and used it as like the basis for Django Unchained? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Set it in that. Because ultimately, Django Unchained is just it's going to be a revenge movie. So, I mean, that story of someone being kidnapped and locked up for 15 years and being framed for his wife's murder, I mean, it's not a universal idea, but we've definitely seen that story before.
Certainly not, but my whole point to this is that people are missing out on a great film.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's not even 10 years old. Go watch that.
It's 10 years old.
It's exactly 10 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that people should go see Old Boy by Chan Wook Park.
We can't make people smarter. We can't make people like good things. That's why fucking The Watch is in theaters. That's why there's a Madea movie every other day. That's why Adam Sandler continues making shitty movies.
Yeah.
It's the reason Total Recall gets remade. It's the reason Videodrome gets remade, because we can't make people like good things.
Yeah. But we can do our damnedest.
Yes.
Here's the one good thing that I hope comes out of this if the movie is not really up to par. This is what I hope happens. I hope Spike Lee makes an unheard of amount of money for this film so that it allows him to make
Miracle really, really great.
No, the really great original material that he tends to work on.
Red Hook Winter, the sequel to the upcoming Red Hook
Summer. Red Hook Summer, yeah. I really want to see Red Hook Summer. I've heard good things. And I want to see him continue Inside Man, because he said he wanted that to be like a new detective series of films. All right. And that would have been awesome.
Insider Man. One of those. Inside Man 2, colon, Insider.
Insider.
I'm sorry, but Red Hook Winter, colon, do I really have to walk 18 blocks to the subway station?
Oh, goodness.
Directed by David Koepp, who did Ghost Town, and written by Koepp and John Camps, who did Zathura, Premium Rush stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Wiley, a New York City bike messenger who takes a curious assignment and must deliver a mysterious envelope.
Hello?
Wiley?
I got a package for you.
90 minutes, Premium Rush.
Hey!
That envelope you picked up, I got to ask for it back.
Who are you?
Not your problem.
Yeah, the thing is, once it goes in the bag, it's got to stay in the bag.
Your name, family, people who care if they see you again.
Is his name really fucking Wiley?
Yeah.
Like Wiley...
Coyote.
Oh, Jesus. Is there a joke in there?
They make a couple.
Oh, a couple?
Well, you know, what can I say? Maybe there's one, maybe there's two. All right, so this movie, it's a clear-cut, out-and-out chase movie. It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt on a fixed-gear bike. He's got no brakes. He can't stop. And he's being chased through New York City by a crooked cop played by Michael Shannon, who is fantastic
in yes.
everything he does.
Right.
And that detective character, Robert Munday, has like serious impulse control issues. He's like a pathological gambler, and he's really violent. And even though the movie is so incredibly simple, the strength of those two characters carry it along. You're not going to get any sort of super complex, Inception-like plot contrivances. You're not going to get any character monologues expressing this depth of emotion or anything.
Right.
It's a very clean-cut, simple movie. And it really zips along really fast. And it's 90 minutes. So it's paced very well. And it ends up being way more exhilarating than any of the fucking blue screen sequences from Total Recall or any of that shit. And it was just really fun. I wouldn't say it was the greatest movie of the year, but it was really fun. It surprised me, and the thing that I like the most about it is what we've been talking about here is that it's original movie. It's not it's not based on anything. It's not a remake or a sequel to something. So it's nice to just be able to sit down and watch something that you know nothing about.
So you say it's not based on anything, but how do we know there's not actually a bike messenger out there named Wiley?
You're right. You got me there.
Okay.
Well, actually, I had read something, and I don't know enough about this to be talking about it, but apparently the writer of a novel called Ultimate Rush is apparently trying to sue David Koepp
because
I think he may have written a similar story.
David Koepp, what have you done?
David Koepp, writer of Jurassic Park.
Wait, he like rides? Like, he rides dinosaurs on Jurassic Park?
He created the amusement park ride of Jurassic Park.
Oh, man.
So the whole water splash and the T-Rex coming out, that's him. That's all him.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Well, I mean, obviously we have a little bit of a light film weekend coming up. So you would you suggest this over what, you know, all the other options people have?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is amassing quite... a following, especially just coming out of The Dark Knight.
Right.
And he's great in it. And Michael Shannon, for anyone who hasn't seen his performances in movies like Revolutionary Road or Take Shelter or Boardwalk Empire,
right,
he's fantastic.
I mean, the guy is incredible. And he's one of our most talented actors right now.
And the character he plays in this movie is so, it's right on the verge of being a parody of like a crazy villain, but he pulls it back in a way to where you literally think this guy is going to snap at any minute, and he's a very real person.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
I have a question about this.
Go for it.
Is this getting a wide release?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I had seen a trailer some months back.
Sure.
I'll be honest. I thought it was a Pepsi Max commercial.
Right? Yeah. I actually, that's a really good way
of saying it. That is great.
I think first off, there was a delay.
There was definitely, they pushed it back at least.
Like at least 2 months or something like that. Yeah. And so maybe just to get it out of the way of all these big blockbusters that they had initially thought were going to do well. Total Recall. Which obviously didn't. But yeah, I think that's what they did. It's a really light weekend.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot. And we're getting into that sort of pre-Oscar season, like few weeks, where it's going to be a couple kids' movies. A few of these like kind of middle, like medium budget, you know, genre picks.
Yep.
And this is the only one. I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I'm really glad that this is good. So
yeah, I would definitely recommend giving it a shot. I mean, it's getting. I think because people aren't expecting a lot out of it, it doesn't have all these expectations on it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's getting fairly positive reviews across the board, I think if anything, it'll be one of the few movies this summer that's not based on a previously existing franchise. So
right.
It's worth seeing for that.
Cool.
My final rating.
Go for it.
3 bananas, 2 coconuts, and 3 New York taxi cabs.
Whoa. Whoa.
Yep.
I'm going to give this one a flat tire because I didn't make it to see the movie.
Because of a flat tire?
Yeah. I made a bike. Not very well, though.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, it's got a flat tire.
Should have had Tim help you with that, being as he's got a canoe over there.
I couldn't find him. I'm pretty sure he was sailing around the island.
You know, I actually saw Tim the other day on the beach, and he's finished the canoe.
Yeah.
And he has put boxcar derby wheels on it.
What?
He's actually just driving it around the beach. Tim, would you like... I mean, you should really own up to that. You haven't invited us on any sort of rides.
Yeah.
It wasn't the wheels that was the difficult part. It was harnessing the various animals as an engine that was challenging.
You're telling me.
As incredible as that is, you did not answer his question.
Yeah, you totally dodged my question. I mean, I am intrigued and fascinated by the idea of live animals as an engine.
Especially if one of them's a badger.
Right. Oh, do we have jungle badgers?
I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know we had boxcars. Either.
Badgers are too hard to harness. I can't.
He's tried.
No, it's a one-seater canoe, so I'm sorry.
Why would you be so selfish? You bastard.
Regardless.
All right.
Okay, so, that's the Premium Rush. Sounds like it's definitely one to check out. Let's talk about something else, something very important and dear to all of us that has been recently released.
Feline AIDS.
Whoa.
No. Sorry. I thought that's what we were talking about. No. You were looking at me.
No.
I thought you were setting me up for feline AIDS, because we've been talking about it a lot.
No, I would do the weird paw thing.
There is a creature alive today who has survived millions of years of evolution without change, without passion, and without logic. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine. It will attack and devour anything. It is as if God created the devil and gave him jaws.
So if you're not talking about feline AIDS, then we must be talking about Jaws on Blu-ray.
Yes, we are.
Steven Spielberg's 1975 shark attack movie.
Yes.
Just came out on Blu-ray for the first time as part of Universal Studios' 100th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks amazing. It has one of the best restorations I've ever seen on a film. And I can only hope that Spielberg gives all of his films this treatment, because he's got a lot of stuff coming out, E.T. and the Indiana Jones movies. And if he put just as much effort into those as he did into Jaws, when you watch them, it'll be like you're watching it for the first time.
Right. And the interesting thing about this restoration, too, is it's kind of the antithesis of what we've seen with him and Lucas a little bit.
Yeah.
Of sort of tweaking their films here and there, or if you're Lucas, then changing them entirely.
Destroying them.
So, but what we don't have here is like a moment of E.T. when it was released on DVD where we replaced the guns with walkie-talkies, stuff right. like that. But on here, they specifically tried to restore it to the film quality.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you even, do you see little like cuts and stuff like that? Is there anything like that? That sort of grainy 70s film like look?
Yeah, that's definitely still there. But they actually went in and I think they did a 4K transfer on the original negative. And they ran it through like this. There's actually a special feature on there called the restoration. It shows you the painstaking lengths that they went through to mm-hmm. make it how it is. And part of that was a wet bath where they run the negative through this liquid solution and it removes all the scratches and imperfections from the film.
Oh, it sounds like something I want.
Yeah. And then they take it and they scan frame by frame into a computer to make a digital negative.
Oh, wow.
And then they go into every single frame digitally and remove any tears, any sort of imperfections in the film. And they do a full, you know, recolor because the negative is obviously heavily faded and damaged.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it looks insane.
So what you're saying is all the people that worked on this restoration probably never want to watch this movie again.
Yeah. I'm sure it took like two or 3 years at least to work on it.
Well, what kind of other features are there?
It's got a ton of special features on it.
Bless you.
Bless you.
Man, you're still coming off that dragonfly bite.
Goddamn dragonflies.
It's some real bite in that. Whew. All right.
So you got The Making of Jaws, a feature-length documentary featuring interviews with key cast and crew. You've got Jaws the Restoration, which is what I just mentioned, where it shows the intricate process of restoring the film. There's tons of deleted scenes and outtakes, as well as interviews with Steven Spielberg and his storyboards, production photos, all that good stuff. Probably the best thing included in the special features and a new addition is the fan-made documentary, The Shark is Still Working, which came out a couple years ago, and it made a few festival circuits. And it's basically all about the impact and legacy of Jaws. It has tons of never-before-seen footage and interviews with the cast. And the amount of access this guy got is amazing because he's talking to Spielberg, Dreyfuss, Roy Scheider, everyone.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Especially since the three of them are kind of reclusive in a lot of ways.
Yeah, very much. So. And yeah, I mean, The Making of Jaws is at least an hour and a half, and The Shark is Still Working is a good 2 hours. So, I mean, they're full-length documentaries that go over every single process of making that film. So overall, amazing Blu-ray. If you love film, you have to own this because it's a definitive release.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to see E.T. And I saw the trailer for the Raiders of the Lost Ark Blu-ray, and from the first frame, it was like, whoa, this movie looks totally different. It looks brand new because all the shadows, all the murkiness was gone. It was very clean and crisp. So
it's going to be really interesting to see that. So what kind of rating would you give this Blu-ray?
I give it 5 bananas, 5 coconuts, and 3 pieces of the Kittner boy.
Whoa. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This is the highest honor a film can have.
Yeah.
And 1 license plate.
Oh my goodness.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Well, obviously then, this is something you guys got to get.
You got to buy it.
It's just, I mean, I don't care how much of a bite it takes out of your budget.
Tim, could you please escort David from the building?
I've been waiting for a bite joke to get in there, but I don't care. I'm proud of it.
Blood in the water and the sharks are
coming. How dare you follow my bad joke with another equally bad joke.
None of man's fantasies of evil can compare with the reality of Jaws. See it before you go swimming.
Before we move on, let's take a time out to recognize the folks that keep the generators running and the spear-wielding natives at bay. Geeks of Doom has all the best geek-related scoops on comics, movies, television, and pop culture paraphernalia. Help us avoid certain death and visit geeksofdoom.com. Now, back to the show.
I guess that's kind of it for the show.
Who the hell?
Was that the door?
If that's another native spirit inviting us to dinner, I'm not here.
Am I interrupting?
Hey, it's Martin.
Oh.
It's Martin.
Well, you might as well introduce yourself to the listeners, so just wheel your ass over here.
Hello, listeners. I am M-A-R-10. You can call me Martin. Skullface Island's personal butler. I clean up. Guard. And document the island for scientific research. In my free time, I find interesting news for the three of you.
All right, so what have you got for us today, Martin?
First, Warner Brothers and WWE Tag Team for Animated Scooby-Doo Movie set at WrestleMania.
That's bullshit.
That can't be possible. There's definitely there's something wrong with you, Martin. That's a malfunction. There's no way they're making a Scooby-Doo movie with professional wrestlers. All right, what's next?
John Travolta, rumored to join Steve Pink's The Toxic Avenger.
What?
That's also bullshit.
Martin, come on. Now, the last headline was absurd, but this is ridiculous. You seriously expect us to believe that they're going to remake Toxic Avenger with John Travolta? That's preposterous. There's something wrong here.
Actually, guys, I've been looking these up, and Martin is right. They're all totally real.
Well, we've got time for one more, you old bucket of bolts. What else do you got for us?
New set images from Mad Max: Fury Road.
Huh. Well, I'll be damned. Martin, you've actually completely redeemed yourself with this bit of Mad Max news. I'm actually really excited about this. It looks pretty interesting.
Wow, good job, Martin. This one actually looks pretty cool. Way to go.
So, can I hang out with you guys every broadcast?
No. No.
I'm really busy.
No.
Whittle a
no.
bone into an Allen wrench.
Well, I guess I will go clean the entire island again. Well, see you guys later.
Oh, well, now we've just hurt his feelings.
No, Martin, look. We really do value you around here. You do a lot. You know, you clean up the island. You're an all-around good guy. I didn't mean what I said. Why don't you just roll yourself over here and help us close out the show, huh?
That concludes another episode of Skullface Island. As always, you can call the Skullface Island hotline at 980-272-0111 or email us at skullfaceisland@gmail.com. And don't forget to tweet us using the Skullface Island hashtag.